This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on February the 8th, 2007. Should you have questions after listening to this recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Morning. I'd like to convene an open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for Thursday, February 8th, 2007. Before we begin with the formal items on our agenda today, I had wanted to mention two things. The first is that yesterday we put on our website and released publicly an advisory opinion request from Senator Obama's Exploratory Committee regarding candidates soliciting funds for the presidential general election. By statute, the agency is required to respond to that request within 60 days of receiving a complete request. And yet last year we began a practice of expediting certain advisory opinion requests, which presented pressing questions for campaigns and for which the agency could provide clear guidance in a time period that was relevant for the campaigns themselves. The first of those expedited advisory opinion requests came up in the Dieter campaign, which was coincidentally featured in a front-page story in today's Wall Street Journal. But in total, I think we handled four matters last year on an expedited basis. We anticipate handling the Obama advisory opinion request on an expedited basis as well. As a consequence, we anticipate providing an answer to that request before the end of this month. The issues raised in the advisory opinion are important, and the agency welcomes public comments on the advisory opinion request. However, commenters should be aware that we anticipate resolving this matter in the next several weeks rather than in the full 60-day statutory period. The second matter I wanted to raise briefly was that this is the last public hearing of the FEC, in which Larry Norton will be attending as the general counsel for the agency, and that Jim Call will be attending as the deputy staff director. Mr. Call, who's with us today, is without doubt the deputy general counsel. While we'll be feting them privately here in the days ahead, I didn't want to allow this moment to pass without a brief public acknowledgement of their accomplishments. These are men of great skill, sound legal judgment, and have an ability to understand the implications and the consequences of decision-making. Those skills have proved invaluable to this agency. In the past 5 years, from the arrival of Larry Norton as the general counsel to his departure, this agency is now processing cases faster and with more aggressive enforcement than ever in its history. The success that Larry Norton has had is measurable. In the 5 years that he's been here, the average length of time from the receipt of a complaint to the closing of a file has fallen by 31%, for a total of over 7.5 months shorter in our handling of those cases. Over 85% of the agency's cases are now closed within 2 years of the filing, which is the fastest and most efficient processing of complaints in this agency's history. At the same time, the size of settlements in those cases has grown from an average of a little less than $61,000 in fiscal year 2002 to over $210,000 in fiscal year 2006. Last year, this agency collected civil penalties of more than $6.2 million, more than twice the amount of penalties in any other single year in the agency's 31-year history. So when I say that Larry has dramatically improved the operations of the Office of the General Counsel of this agency, it is not simply talk. The numbers back it up. There's another important side of the job that is not measurable, but that is just as important. Larry and Jim both bring a steadiness of judgment, a depth of appreciation of the law, and a commitment to public service that has made them valued and trusted counsel to the commissioners. Their voices are heard and their advice has been valued in every one of the most difficult decisions this agency has made during their tenure here. Jim has been an especially steady hand in helping to guide this agency through some of its most difficult problems. They've also done an excellent job at recruiting very talented lawyers to fill the vacancies that have appeared over time. As a consequence, they leave us with both a team of very seasoned managers and many talented new lawyers. We will be well served by their efforts for years to come. One of those lawyers, Tommy Duncan, has agreed to serve as acting general counsel, and she is joined by experienced associate general counsel, Rick Bader in litigation, Rosie Smith in policy, Rhonda Vosding in enforcement, and special counsel Greg Baker. I think I can speak for all of the commissioners and the entire agency when I say that we will miss you both. With that, I'd like to turn to the agenda items for the day, the first of which is the correction and approval of the minutes. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move approval of the minutes of an open session for Thursday, January 25th, 2007, as set forth in Agenda Document 0704.
The Vice Chairman has moved approval of Agenda Document 07-04. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Madam Secretary, if you can record that the minutes have been approved by a vote of 6-0. The second item on the agenda is Draft Advisory Opinion 2006-34 involving working assets. We have Jonathan Levin and Amy Rothstein from the General Counsel's Office. And I'm sorry, there's a late document that has been submitted, I guess, as well, which is Agenda Document 07-07A, I believe. And is there an...
All three. I'll make a motion.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chairman, I move suspension of our rules concerning the timely submission of documents so that we may consider Agenda Documents 0707, 0707A, and 0707B.
Okay. The Vice Chairman has so moved. Is there discussion on the motion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Madam Secretary, the Vice Chairman's motion carries by a vote of 6-0. Now we will turn to Johnny Levin, I believe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Commission has received an advisory opinion request from Working Assets, a for-profit corporation providing telecommunications services. Working Assets proposes to enter into affinity programs with political committees and qualified nonprofit corporations, in which Working Assets would market its wireless phone services to individuals on the political committee sponsor's mailing list. Customers would receive rebates of 10% of their monthly charges, which they could either take as a credit on their next month's bill or direct to be sent to the political committee sponsor. Working Assets proposes to value its solicitation services at 10% of the marketing costs and to provide the services in exchange for use of the political committee sponsors' mailing lists. The draft concludes that Working Assets may enter into the proposed affinity arrangements. Working Assets may provide solicitation services in exchange for use of the political committee sponsors' mailing list, so long as the value of the services is a result of arm's-length negotiations between Working Assets and the political committee sponsor and reflects the fair market value of the goods and services provided to the sponsor. The draft also concludes that the contributions to the political committee sponsor would be made by the individual customers rather than by Working Assets. Finally, the draft concludes that qualified nonprofit corporations could participate in the program without losing their QNC status. We received no public comments on the draft. The Office of General Counsel did receive feedback from commissioners, and in response to one comment, we proposed the following amendment. On page 13, line 18, we would insert the phrase, would be start with the comma, and the contribution, comma, close, comma, after the word $50. So the phrase would read, exceeding $50, comma, and the contribution, comma, within 10 days of the receipt of the bill payment. And then we would delete the phrase along with the contribution itself. And I will give the Commission Secretary a copy of this
Could you repeat that one more time?
Sure. Sure. Okay. On page 13, line 18, after the phrase exceeding the $50, there would be a comma, and we'd add, and the contribution, comma. Later on in that line, we will delete the phrase, along with the contribution itself. I will be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Discussion on the draft document. Vice Chairman Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had several amendments that I had submitted in a couple of agenda documents, and the council's office had submitted proposed revisions to the amendments set forth in 07-07B, which are certainly satisfactory to me. But just in general, the requesters here and the council's office are dealing with a series of proposals that have come to the commission over the years to provide various kinds of services to political committees. And certain requirements of the Act have caused some technical issues to arise, very often because the Act was written in the 1970s, assuming that contributions would be made by cash or by check, in person, or by regular mail. And those modes of financial transactions, of course, have paled with new commercial and technological developments. And generally speaking, when the Commission has encountered these new commercial and technological developments, we have tried to allow organizations and campaigns to engage in those normal commercial practices consistent with the underlying policies of the FECA. And that has sometimes caused some complications, some complexities in the particular applications as we've tried to sort of match up this 70s-era act with a 21st-century market economy. And so in that context, I think it's important as we look at each new proposal not to add yet another layer of complexity, but rather to look and reflect as we put particular conditions or qualifications on particular requests as to what the underlying FECA purpose was being served by that, and whether the condition was put in the advisory opinion because it was offered by the requester based on their circumstances or needs, or whether it was one that was essential for compliance with the Act. And so with that background, I think while the staff did a very lawyer-like job of going through prior AOs and applying those to the situations presented, I thought at least in some instances the application from one of the prior AOs to these circumstances was not necessary, was not essential to meeting any requirements of the FECA. And so I thought in several cases some of the particular applications could come out, and that really characterizes the amendments I'm proposing in 0707A, and I'll be happy to discuss those in particular if anyone wants to. And as to the amendment in 0707B, my concern was that working assets is presenting in that section of the request a proposal for valuing its solicitation services that it's offering to the political committee. And they're proposing a 10% valuation figure based on what to me is a fairly discernible requirement. Our regulations require that the services be offered for the usual normal charge, which the regulations define for goods as the market price or for services as commercially reasonable charge. I think Working Assets has presented facts that establish that this 10% figure is a commercially reasonable charge for those services, and I think we should approve that. And I think that's what the amendment, as adjusted by the Council's office, achieves. I don't think, well, it's clear that that figure was not presented as a result of arm's length negotiations between Working Assets and any political committee customers, because no such negotiations have occurred. Nor do I think Working Assets was suggesting that they were going to go and negotiate this figure. Rather, they were saying this was the price they were planning to charge, and was that a reasonable price? Again, on the particular facts here, I think it was. That's not to establish a 10% threshold for, you know, everything that sort of looks like this, but just in the totality of facts here, I think it's reasonable. And so I thought we should approve it on that basis rather than inserting the arm's length standard. And so that was the purpose behind those amendments, and I'd be happy to have discussion or move them at an appropriate point.
Okay. Further discussion? No? It'll be time for an appropriate motion then.
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of draft advisory opinion 2006-34 with the amendment previously described by Mr. Levin of the Council's office, with the amendment set forth in agenda document 0707A, and with the amendment set forth in 0707B as modified by the page circulated by the Council's office, which I believe is before us all.
Okay. Mr. Call.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As the Vice Chairman just indicated, we did circulate an email just before the meeting to try to clarify and set forth our understanding of the dialogue that had occurred prior to the meeting. And I think I need to read this into the record since there's not a document before us. So I will start with page 10 of the blue draft, line 13, the sentence, the period at the end of that sentence, marketing costs, would become a comma. Then going to agenda document 0707B, the Vice Chairman's amendment, the first phrase of that amendment, beginning with because and going through rebate program, that would come out. The word and would be inserted. On the next line where it says fair market value of, that would be replaced with usual and normal charge for. And then after the word provided in that same line, the words to political committee sponsors would be added. And why don't I read the whole thing so everybody can understand what it says. Beginning then on line 13 of page 10, Working Assets proposes to value its solicitation services to a political committee sponsor at 10% of Working Assets marketing costs, comma, and this 10% figure reflects the usual and normal charge for the services being provided to political committee sponsors under the facts presented, period.
Okay, unfortunately, that is. I'm going to ask you to go through that again because it's slightly different from the documents that were handed to me right at the, as we began this meeting, and I want to make sure that we're all working from the same text.
The difference appears to be where the phrase "under the facts presented" appears.
Since it was in there already, we can just leave it where it is.
Okay.
Yes, I agree.
There are more variations than that on the document that was handed to me just now, so I want to try and make sure that we've got the right, that especially the Secretary as well as those who are voting on this understand exactly what this is saying at the end. So as I understand it, I'll put it two different ways. The text I guess the first change is on page 10, line 13, the existing words, which are Working Assets proposed to value its solicitation services to a political committee sponsor at 10% of Working Assets marketing cost, remains unchanged, but the period then becomes a comma, and then the text would continue, this 10% figure reflects the usual and normal charge two political committee sponsors, am I correct? Or how do,
no,
maybe you can tell me how it goes.
It would be the usual and normal charge for the services being provided to political committee sponsors, and the rest remains the same under the facts presented.
Commissioner Weintraub.
I'm sorry. The email that we got right before the meeting didn't say that. And I just want to ask whether this is there's a change in the phraseology, and I want to know whether this is significant or not. But we appear to have gone from fair market value to usual and normal. And we've already established that there isn't really a usual and normal for this because it's, you know, sort of sui generis. They're just starting up this program. They're not proposing to do for this customer what they've done for another customer. They've just come up with a rate that makes sense to us and, you know, seems to be based on, you know, it makes sense under all the circumstances. So, you know, just going on the plain meaning of the word, it sounds more to me like fair market value than usual and normal because there isn't a usual and normal. So I was wondering why you chose to go from fair market value to usual and normal.
Mr. Call.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was trying to reflect the conversation that was going forth back and forth in an email dialogue as to what the 10% was reflecting, and my understanding was that the 10% reflected usual and normal based upon the fact that this would be the rate that would be charged to all political committees under this program. So,
and this is a factual matter. My impression is that this is a rate that is charged to two non-political committee customers already. My recollection of the request is that there were two, I believe they were 501c3 organizations that were provided this 90%, 10% pricing split. Am I correct in that?
I believe that's correct, but perhaps is that the correct on the?
I believe that's correct.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Further discussion? Maybe we'll take a moment while people parse through the language.
Mm-hmm. At the 10%.
D.
Okay.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, listen, what did he say? What did Leonard say?
You know, I'm sorry. Commissioner Monspikowski.
Would this be made easier if we... I mean, I have the printed out email text. Could we just offer this as an amendment from the table?
Unfortunately, that's not the text that's being discussed. The Madam Secretary, is it clear to you the language both that Mr. Levin and Mr. Call have been discussing? The truth of the matter is we often are circulating drafts around, and this is the advantage of having a document coming into the room. But we were, I think, all working late last night and a little bit this morning on this, so it's a little... More free-form than normal. Mr. Call?
Just to clarify for Commissioner Vonspikowski, the change from the email that was sent around was substituting usual and normal for fair market value. We can go to fair market value. We thought that usual and normal was more reflective of the conversation that was being had before the meeting. I don't know that that makes a huge difference, though.
Yeah, there was one other sort of minor grammatical change as well, but anyway. So I think we've got some understanding. I think that we have a motion before us by the vice chairman.
I just wanted to add to that motion, given we've done this on the fly, authority for the council's office to make any necessary technical and conforming changes, because I wouldn't be surprised if we'd snuck in some grammatical errors or something else.
Okay. So we have before us a motion by the Vice Chairman to approve the draft advisory opinion in 06-34 with the amendments offered by Mr. Levin here at the table, as well as the amendments in agenda documents 07-07A, 07-07B, as modified by Mr. Call. here at the table, and to authorize the General Counsel's office to make any necessary technical and conforming amendments to the document. Discussion on the motion.
Does the Chairman have a copy?
Commissioner Toner.
Does the Chairman have a copy of this?
Or
that's what Commissioner Noah.
Darling.
Do the lawyers feel that's adequate, or are there other thoughts or comments?
Everything seems to be fine, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, what good news.
Exactly. Any other discussion on the motion? Okay, seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Madam Secretary, if you could record that the Vice Chairman's motion is adopted by a vote of 6-0. Thank you very much. The next item on our agenda is Draft Advisory Opinion 2006-36, which appears as Agenda Document 07-05. I believe we have from the General Counsel's Office today Cheryl Helmsley and Amy Rothstein. This matter involves, obviously, the Green Senatorial Committee. So, Ms. Hemsley, at your convenience.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, Commissioners. Agenda Document 07-05 is a draft advisory opinion responding to a request from the Green Senatorial Campaign Committee, a political committee established by the Green National Committee. The GSCC asks whether it qualifies as the National Senatorial Campaign Committee of the Green Party of the United States. While the Commission on several occasions has been asked to determine if a political committee is the national committee of a political party, this is the first case in which a committee has asked whether it is the National Senatorial Campaign Committee of a political party. The draft analyzes the GSCC's activities regarding party building and ballot access for sufficiency on a national scale and for its success at gaining ballot access for Senate candidates in a number of states in various geographical areas. The draft concludes that the GSCC's activities are sufficiently national in nature and that the committee is successful enough in its ballot access activities to be considered the National Senatorial Campaign Committee of the Green Party of the United States. We did receive one comment on this draft. Mr. Chairman, I'd be pleased to discuss any issues.
Okay. Thank you. Any comments? Commissioner Von Spakovsky?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank the Office of General Counsel for their work on this. They've done a very good draft. But I would like to point out, I think for the benefit of the Green Party, that their treasurer, David Meyerson, sent in a comment letter, and it made two assertions in it that are in error, and I think it's important for the record that we clear that up. In his letter, he believed that our draft makes an error because he believes that the Green Senatorial Campaign Committee won't be able to make unlimited transfers among the federal accounts of state committees and the National Party Committee. And he also asserted that authorized candidate committees will be limited in the amounts they can transfer to the Senatorial Committee. Both of those assertions are wrong. I think the confusion here is because of the distinction that the Commission has between contributions and transfers. When party committees move money amongst themselves, we don't consider that to be a contribution. That's a transfer. And the law specifically provides the transfers among a national party committee and any of its state party committees or other subordinate party committees can be made without limit. So that will apply to the Green Senatorial Committee. On the second issue, an authorized candidate committee does not make contributions to a party committee. Those transactions are considered transfers, and they are also not limited by the $28,500 contributional limit that applies to contributions from individuals to national party committees. So neither of those two limits that he believed applied will apply once we approve this AO. Thanks.
Thank you. Yes, no, I think we all concur that the normal transfer rules for senatorial committees would apply in this context as well, and that the advisory opinion was not drafted in a way to imply the contrary. Any other discussion? Okay. Vice Chairman Mason?
I move approval of draft advisory opinion 2006-36 as set forth in agenda document 0705.
Okay. The Vice Chairman has moved the approval of the draft advisory opinion in 2006-36 as set forth in agenda document 0705. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Madam Secretary, if you could record the Vice Chairman's motion, it was adopted by a vote of 6-0. Thank you very much. The next matter on our agenda is a draft advisory opinion in 2006-38 involving Senator Robert Casey, Jr. and the Casey State Committee. And I believe we have some late submitted documents in this matter.
Mr. Chairman, I move suspension of our rules concerning the timely submission of documents so that we may consider agenda document 0706A.
Thank you very much. The Vice Chairman has so moved. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Madam Secretary, the Vice Chairman's motion is adopted by a vote of 6-0. We have from the General Counsel's Office Robert Knopp and Dwayne Pugh. Mr. Knopp, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Agenda document 0706 responds to an advisory opinion request from Senator Casey and his state campaign committee. Senator Casey was elected to represent Pennsylvania in the United States Senate in November of last year. Prior to that time, he was the state treasurer of Pennsylvania. Senator Casey was elected to that position in November of 2004. He formed a state committee in connection with that race. The state committee has a surplus remaining in its account from the 2004 election. It would like to use a reasonable accounting method to determine the portion of its surplus that is comprised of federally permissible funds, that is, funds that are from sources and in amounts permissible under federal law. Once it has identified its federally permissible funds, the state committee would like to use those funds to make donations to state and local candidates and state and local party organizations, and to pay the travel expenses of Senator Casey or any of his agents solely in connection with state and local events. The draft before you concludes that the state committee must use a reasonable accounting method to identify its federally permissible funds. Once it has done so, the draft further concludes that the state committee may use those funds as outlined in the request. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. And Commissioner Weintraub had some suggested amendments. Commissioner Weintraub?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think staff did a fine job, and the analysis is correct. And the purpose of my amendment, which is in Agenda Document 706A, is merely to clarify one point, which I think was implicit, but perhaps not stated in as clear terms as it could have been, and hopefully it's clearer now. The point is not to break any new law here, but in the LaHood opinion, which we issued in 2005, the Commission established that when a federal office holder has a state committee and has funds that were in that committee state account that are federally permissible, they were received in compliance with all of the federal limits and prohibitions, that when they distribute those funds to state candidates, the distribution of those funds, the amounts that they can distribute, is governed by state law. It's not governed by the federal limits. And we just, as I said, the Commission stated that in LaHood, and I wanted to make sure that that was perfectly clear in this. And, you know, it's just a clarifying amendment, not intended to be substantive.
Thank you. Any other discussion on the matter? Seeing none, it would be an appropriate time for motions. Commissioner Weintraub?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move approval of, now let me get this right, Agenda Document 0706 as modified by 0706A, and authorize the staff to do technical and conforming amendments if any are needed.
Very good. Commissioner Weintraub has moved adoption of Agenda Document 0706 as amended by 0706A and authorized the staff to make any necessary technical and conforming amendments. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Madam Secretary, if you could record that Commissioner Weintraub's motion was adopted by a vote of 6-0 of the Commission. Thank you very much. The next item on our agenda involves a policy statement establishing a pilot program for probable cause hearings. And again, Mr. Vice Chairman, I note we have a late submitted document.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move suspension of our rules concerning the timely submission of documents so that we may consider agenda documents 0708 and 0708A.
Very good. The Vice Chairman has so moved. Any discussion on the motion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Madam Secretary, the Vice Chairman's motion is adopted by a vote of 6-0. We have we have both Mr. Schonkweiler and Ms. Vosding from the General Counsel's Office here, but I think Commissioner Weintraub and possibly Commissioner Toner may have some comments initially. Commissioner Weintraub?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, I am very pleased to be bringing along with Commissioner Toner this document to the table today. It's the product of a lot of work from a lot of people. We've had input from all the commissioners' offices and as well as the general counsel's office. And I'm very pleased with it. Ever since I got to the commission, I've been focused on trying to improve our enforcement process. And as the chairman stated in his earlier comments about the outgoing general counsel and deputy general counsel, our enforcement program has never been stronger. We're moving cases faster. We're collecting higher penalties. It's the result of a lot of hard work by not only the leadership, as the chairman so rightly described, of the general counsel and the deputy general counsel, but a lot of hard work by everybody in the enforcement division. And I really appreciate that because we have really never been in better shape. We're coming off a record year in terms of both higher penalties and shorter processing time than ever. The whole division is working harder, smarter, faster than ever before, and we're seeing the results, and the results are demonstrable. And with this proposal today, I think we're also going to make the process fairer, a little bit more transparent, at least to the respondents, and better informed for the commissioners. I expect that most cases will continue to settle at the pre-probable cause phase because the vast majority of the cases that come before us are the result of inadvertent violations. And when people find out that they have inadvertently violated the law, they generally want to get right with the law and are happy to, I don't know how happy they are, but they are willing to conciliate in a relatively expeditious fashion. But there are a small number of cases that are more difficult, where there is more controversy, and in a lot of those cases, the respondents have long and strongly felt that they would like the opportunity to be heard literally by the commission itself. Obviously, they have numerous opportunities to file papers and to put their arguments in writing, but until now, there's been no opportunity for respondents to come before the commission and make arguments face-to-face. And I think this is a very good idea. It's an idea that's long in coming. It was first voiced, I think, in 1982 by a committee of the American Bar Association, and was raised again in 2003 when back when I was chair and I convened a hearing on our enforcement processes, and it was one of the things that respondents talked about that they felt strongly that they would like to see the agency do. And it's not dissimilar from the kind of hearings that we hold in Title 26 audits, where we allow respondents to come in and make arguments and be questioned by the commissioners and the general counsel. We use that as our model. Obviously we've never done it before in this context, and that's why we're setting it up as a pilot program in 8 months. It'll come back before the commission for another vote to see whether, and actually it could come back at any time, but we've set it up so that there's a definite point at eight months' time when a vote will be scheduled, and the commission will reconsider whether it needs to be changed, whether we want to make it permanent, whether it's not working at all. But I think it's going to be very helpful. It's going to lead to better informed decision-making. Respondents will walk out of the process feeling that they have at least been heard. And whether they get the results they want, you know, the results may not change, but I think people will feel that it is a fairer process. And again, I don't imagine that it will happen in that many of our cases. It is only available at the probable cause phase, and most of our cases do settle out before then. But I'm very enthusiastic about this. I think everyone has seen the proposal. It's very similar to the proposal we put out for comment. All of the comments were positive on our doing this, and I'll be interested to see how it plays out. The second document is a very technical amendment. I was so enthusiastic that I wanted to put it into effect today as soon as we vote on it, but our lawyers advised me that we'd really be better off making the effective date when it's published in the Federal Register. So I'll take their advice on that.
Thank you. Other discussion? Commissioner Toner?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I at the outset want to thank everyone within the agency who has worked on this document and has worked on this process over many months. This truly has been a collaborative effort of so many people. I also want to personally thank Commissioner Weintraub for her efforts here. I think it's fair to say that we would not have the opportunity to be considering this document today without her personal commitment to this issue and dedication to seeing it through and that of her very fine staff. So I want to personally thank the Commissioner for her efforts and support on this initiative. As Commissioner Weintraub noted, this is the latest outgrowth of, I think, a very important hearing the Commission held in 2003 on the enforcement process, which really was a very systematic review of the process. And a number of, I think, significant reforms have occurred as a result of that, first of which, for the first time, respondents having access to deposition transcripts, which had not previously been the case. And also, we've recently issued a policy statement clarifying, I think, significant questions about treasurer liability and the circumstances in which treasurers could be personally liable, which was an issue that was noted in the enforcement hearing that we had in 2003. And this is the latest step in these innovations. Because of the testimony that we received in 2003, one of the focal points was a strong desire by respondents across the political spectrum to have a chance to be heard orally as well as in writing in the enforcement process. I want to emphasize that it is absolutely true that the agency is not legally required to afford these kinds of hearings because under the Administrative Procedures Act, the fact that respondents can go to court and have a de novo proceeding there provides them with the important due process protections that the Constitution mandates. But I think the discussion we're having today is whether or not, apart from whether we're constitutionally required to have these types of hearings or legally required, whether we choose as a prudential matter to have them. And I strongly believe it's appropriate to do so. As the Commissioner noted, there's some important safeguards in the procedure. It will only be available for cases that reach probable cause, which are a tiny fraction of the agency's docket. And those are often cases that involve very important legal questions or have complex factual records or otherwise are very significant to the respondents involved, given that the vast majority of our cases, fortunately, are resolved before probable cause. But in those rare cases that do have those types of high stakes, and when the respondent does believe it could be important to present arguments orally, this pilot program would allow that opportunity. And I think that it's fair to say that oral argument in general has been seen as aiding the decision-making process. Certainly, I think, has been the case in our judicial system, and I'm confident that that could be the case here at the FEC as well. But I also think it makes a lot of sense to have this as a pilot program. Let's see how it goes. It's hard to anticipate all the issues that can arise when you develop new innovations. And this 8-month period, I think, is an appropriate period to test this and then decide at the end of that 8-month period what to do with the program. We've had other programs that really have operated under either a pilot program basis or a sunset provision and have done very well here. And have been renewed over time. But that would be something that the agency would have to decide 8 months hence. But overall, I think it's a very carefully crafted proposal. This will not be for all respondents, but it could potentially be for those respondents that are involved in major cases in shaping the law in this area or cases of very complex facts or otherwise cases with very high stakes, people who want to be heard here. And before a probable cause vote is taken, I think the decision-making process will be aided in that regard, and I think that's a real virtue. But in closing, again, I want to thank Commissioner Weintraub. She's done terrific work in this area. It definitely has been a point of emphasis for her, and I think it's a real achievement. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Other discussion? Commissioner Weintraub?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move approval of agenda document number 0708 as modified by agenda document 0708A and authorize the staff to make any technical and conforming amendments that are necessary.
Very good. Commissioner Weintraub has moved approval of agenda document 0708 as amended by 0708A and authorize the staff to make necessary technical and conforming amendments. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor. Commissioner Mazepkowski, I apologize.
I just have a question, and that is, since this will be effective upon publication, do we know how quickly that will happen?
I think we can expect it to be published toward the end of next week, or possibly even the middle of next week.
Very good. All those in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Madam Secretary, if you could record Commissioner Weintraub's motion was adopted by a vote of 6-0. The last item on our agenda involves management administrative matters. Ms. Masonette, are there management administrative matters to address?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No, we don't have any matters, but I would like to, on behalf of the Office of the Stack Director, publicly also thank General Counsel Norton, Deputy General Counsel Call, for the service they provided to our office and to the Commission. When they'll be missed. Thank you.
Very good. And with that, brings to the close the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission for February 8th, 2007. Thank you.